You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. I'm your host. I'll introduce our guest in a second and bring him in, but welcome to today's special review of Natural Born Killers, which is from 1994. Hard to believe this movie's over 25 years old, but then again, I've known Eli 27 years, going on 28. First of all, let me welcome Eli to the show before I do the intro. Long time. How's it going, Eli? How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for asking me to come on.
Oh, of course. Just to give you guys some nice reference here to how we're going to get into reviewing the film, because this is new. One of our producers I've known 20 years, and we have talked about multiple directors. We've done discussions, all that. But of course, as I said, I've known Eli here going on 28 years. So I'm going to try to veer it towards not the shorthand that we have, so we can discuss this film and bring some points across. But Natural Born Killers, Oliver Stone's follow-up to JFK, which Eli and I did not know each other at the time, floored both of us. Let's start with there, and then I'll segue into Natural Born. So, Eli, we meet each other when we're 14. JFK comes out when we're 12. Any first thoughts or reactions that you can remember about JFK?
I remember hearing a lot of conspiracy theories around it. For some reason, I've just always been a natural history buff, and just having a big name, filmmaker covering, what happened to John F. Kennedy, and making it, fictionalized version of, what had happened really, really made me think about, and got the gears turning in my head. It just seemed so big. I remember it was such an epic movie for me to take in, but I was so hungry to watch it, but it just seemed too big for me at the time. And I told myself, this is one of those movies I got to watch again so I can completely absorb it.
It's interesting that you say that, because we were, we're 4 months apart in age. I thought it's the Waikiki twins. Let's both take a moment to say boo that the Waikiki twins is gone. this is how far back that theater goes for us. I remember the day we went there to see a movie for $4 and movies went to $4.50, and we were like crushed. We didn't have the fucking 50
cents. Yeah, it was like ripping us off.
Can you believe that, Eli? We didn't have the 50 cents. That's so hilarious. Anyways, so JFK
for me,
I saw there. Well,
we can save our lunch trips for, Jack in the Box for another time,
All right.
The value of money to us.
That's true. That's two tacos right there. That's right.
Man. We had it down, ladies and gentlemen, we had it down to the quarter, okay?
Yeah, that's so true. Plus, that's bus fare to and from. So
exactly.
You can see these movies are so important to us, because they not only, I've always said here as we review the film that a film is the movie, and then it's also what you bring to it. It's also where you see it, who you see it with. So JFK I'd seen, our dad made us watch it, and I was just like Eli, same thing. I was floored. I mean, I didn't understand they were using 20 different film stocks. I didn't understand what a director did. I knew I loved history because, Dad loved talking history with us. You guys have had conversations. Yep. And, of course, we enter this and we don't know that we're fans of Born on the Fourth and of Platoon, which is the same filmmaker. So, anyway, so Natural Born comes along. And we're just... pardon my language, Kev can edit this, but we're just fucking floored. We're 16 years old. I remember we had to sneak into Pearl Ridge. Remember that?
Yes.
It was NC-17.
That was an adventure. Yep.
Yeah, and we saw it a couple of times. We won't name the women, but we saw it a couple of times with our girlfriends. And if you remember correctly, Eli, I remember this. We saw it, I think it was four times, and after the second time, they didn't want to go. And this makes me laugh because it was kind of like, for me, looking back, it's kind of like, well, that says it all right there. Like, if you're with a girl and she doesn't want to see like one of your favorite movies again, that's kind of like a telltale of the future. And so Eli and I were, and this is, Good.
No, I was just going to say that I'm just going to no comment on that for the audience.
Yeah,
I'm
your lawyer told you to plead the fifth.
So I'm just going to stay.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know? Right, exactly. Because this will be posted where even my version of the story could hear it. So we are talking respectfully. With Facebook now, it's no longer just a name that vanishes. So Natural Born, first of all,
I'm just going to nod and wave, boys, nod and wave.
Yeah, exactly.
Just from the penguins from, what is that, Madagascar, nod and wave.
Yeah, exactly. So, Natural Born for us, obviously a reason it was NC-17, because 16-year-olds aren't supposed to comprehend. For all of you out there, before, we're going to tear into this now, but there's a director's cut that's much more gruesome. But anyways, so Natural Born, first question for you, Eli, is this movie was an indictment of the media, and a lot of people blame this movie for violence, but they say, oh, it causes violence. I've seen this movie, I'd venture to say, 100 times, never made me want to commit violence once, but did make me question the media. So in the context of how things have evolved, for you, Eli, how has the film evolved for you, how you've seen media change, with that being the seed that was planted in us?
Well, I think it's the same as it was back then. It's more of a reflection of, the modern media and its effects on society, especially our society here in the United States. I remember that controversy, how they were saying that it was going to push children and push young adults to do, some crazy stuff. But I think it was an extreme, hard look at today's media and in the 90s media and its influence on the younger generation. Is Mickey and Mallory Knox is hitting headlines and posing in various different magazines and newspapers. It's no different than you see today. Even with the villains of today, they're still posing and looking in certain ways, still being shaped a certain way for the media, even as a villain, still the glorious villain. And it's sad that, that it is still as important today as it was in the 90s, as a reflection on the media and its effects on people, especially younger people. Something that now I appreciate is being an older guy instead of teenager, being able to look back at it throughout my growth as a person and really going, I see how this can, affect, the youth. I mean, I've got a son, Storm. He's older than we were when we first saw the film. And that media now is shaping his mind the way that they're portraying the film, shaping the mind, with Mick and Mallory Knox shaping the minds of the youth at that time. It's just crazy. It's just still just as relevant.
It's for me, I totally agree with you. It's almost in a weird way too relevant. I watched it about a month around Christmas time. I showed it to Dad, and of course, we spoke the other day, not particularly his film, but one of the reasons why we wanted to recommend this film, everyone, was because, it's a wild piece of art. It's not for your standard average moviegoer. It's definitely not a date night movie. It's one to watch.
Well,
and
unless you're a little different.
About. Yeah, that's true. unless like the joke he tells about going to the drive-in and Johnny. But Woody, let's talk about Woody for a sec here, because we have Woody coming off of mainly Cheers and, of course, we see White Men Can't Jump. So all we have is a funny Woody, and we have the basketball Woody, which he was a real basketball player in real life. So that wasn't stunts and White Men Can't Jump. And we see this just maniac character who at times for me, and I want to see what you think, doesn't really feel like he's acting, even though Woody's brilliant and we've since seen a 25-year career. But how did you feel about Woody? That was kind of like our first, holy shit, Woody Harrelson experience.
to be honest, I drank in his character. I was young, lost, angry. And I definitely had a different opinion of his character than I do now as an older guy. Because I identified a lot with his character. And I don't know if I think I've mentioned it to you in the past, but there's a companion book along with the movie also called Natural Born Killers that tells a side story and backstory for each character's in depth. And it's a companion to the film. And I read that, and it gives you so much more depth to the character. So then when I actually, put the two together, the film itself, along with this companion book, I was able to appreciate, there was a lot of backstory to Mickey Knox that never made it into the film. And he went through terrible abuse, and you'll see it in the flashes as the male child, in the crib and stuff. It hints to that companion book where it breaks it down and what those scenes are, and the mother yelling at him in the film. There's more detail to that. But where this, it just seemed like he should have been a good guy. But his upbringing brought him down. And the way that Woody played it was perfect. It felt like he was that character. Like it was him. He was supposed to be the ultimate, the redneck hero that, was going to save the world instead of tear it down. And I feel like he identified with the character as well. It just, like you said, it didn't seem like he was acting. It seemed like he just believed that he was just sharing to the world what had happened to him in his own personal experience. It just felt too real.
Well, Woody has, in case people don't know, it's common knowledge, so it's not like we're spilling the beans here, but Woody, his dad was on death row and was put to death. Apparently he was a mob hitman. And there's a rumor I've never been able to confirm. It's out there, and of course Woody doesn't talk about it. I even heard once that his dad was one of the guys on the grassy knoll when JFK was shot, when they found four guys. Yeah, I heard that once, and then of course it was like in and out of books, and of course it's not like Woody's going to talk about it, but it's kind of like, so you got to figure, those demons, like you're saying, to play off of, all of us, whatever, it's not, anybody on the planet has had issues with their dad, arguments, whatever, but to really sit back and think if Uncle G or Dad to us was a mob hitman, we've seen Dad get mad because pizza was overcooked. We've seen Uncle Snap, but like to do that is kind of crazy. So it's like, so for Woody to access that, like you're saying, it's, when you just said that, I didn't even realize how it's like he's not, it is like he's not getting in character. He is just like, okay, roll camera. And then to see what he does afterwards in the last 25 years.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah. And he's so diverse. We both know Woody. I always say Woody can do anything. I think a little bit of that too comes out, hard movie to watch people, but since we're recommending Natural Born Killers, The Messenger, when he plays the guy who lets people know that they lost a family member in Iraq, there's definitely some demons he taps into there. But
I have to be honest, I haven't seen that movie from when you warned me about it. I've been tempted.
Yeah,
to,
don't see it.
But
don't
it touches
it.
On some
I just
deep
was telling
stuff.
The audience. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just letting the audience know. Sorry to bring that up. But, yeah, so, people, you got to see this with Woody. And Woody, so for now with Woody, you can't go Mickey without bringing up Mallory. This is also all bias aside to how much we love this film. And, again, we're seeing this as 16-year-olds, so we're discovering the great doom. Well, actually, it's suiting that we discovered girls, and the title is Natural Born Killers. Sorry, had to. And
dun, dun, dun.
And we're dun, 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 and we're discovering the simplicities of the life, like the arcade and music. We're hanging out at Waikiki. So you got with Mickey, you got to talk about Mallory. So Juliet Lewis, my favorite performance of hers. What do you have to say about Juliet Lewis in this film?
I think that was my first real introduction to her. I wasn't attracted to her for her physical looks in there. She reminded me a lot of people I met later on in life, but just the way she was, as far as her personality, with you know, the molestation going on in her home and with her mother, you know, just watching and not doing anything. And again, the companion book that I read with it added to a lot. I mean, gave a lot more flavor to it and to her history. And she was really brought up wrong. And the thing is she truly, and I believe, just if you take the film just by itself, that she believed that she was doing right. That she was gonna, you know, like how she was, you know, with Mickey, you know, in the beginning of the film where, you know, they're talking about how she's saying that they're angels. You know, I really believe that she believed that. And Juliette Lewis just, the way she would move and you know, the way she would just get into character, you felt bad for her. You know, that I think she made the Mickey and Mallory Knox tie as far as what they were put, you know, what they did in the film by showing that how attractive they were to the youth. I think it was because of her, because of an abusive, how she came from an abusive home. And, you know, she fought back and rebelled. But then, like, you know, when they were doing the interviews with some of the kids, you know, for some of the media clips where they were saying that, oh, you know, well, I think killing is wrong, but if I was going to be a serial killer, I'd be Mickey and Mallory Knox. I think that allure came from Juliette Lewis and the way she brought in her character and how she made Mallory Knox this seemingly frail, you know, Southern, you know, girl that was being abused to this strong, almost, you know, demonic woman who thought that every step of the way she was doing 100% good and living by the way of the light. And I think that dynamic is hard to do, to have a truly evil, horrible, you know, context and character, but have you, the viewer, believe that they're, like, you know, living the righteous life. You know, that was fantastic, and I really enjoyed her performance.
Well, yeah, because she's supposed to, I mean, Tarantino's story, of course, there's all kinds of stuff you can look up as a film lover, listener, audience member about that, where it became an Oliver Stone movie. I think one of the only Oliver Stone films I can, no, he did co-write it off of the story, but this Oliver Stone, you know, he's no non-nut himself, for those of you. I can't believe we're actually at the age now of people who would know Oliver Stone by, say, even Any Given Sunday is 20 years old, or Alexander, yep. You probably know him as Snowden, which there's a whole other podcast we could do, but to think, I see on the Classic Movie Channel, and they go, oh, coming to Classic Movie Month, Platoon, and it's like, wait, Platoon, yeah. Okay, that is 30
years old.
Doesn't
that kind of hurt your feelings
old,
a little bit?
Well, you know, it's weird because for you and I, like, you know, yeah. Okay. I see. That's where we're going to, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you're older than me, but I see where you're going. Hint, hint. What's funny about that is.
That's what brothers are for.
Yeah, exactly. Cut, Kevin. So basically, what's weird about that is that those films, you know, those films we were watching, like, when you look back, too young, I mean, you can say this now, like, you think about it, Platoon was out when we were 7, Born on the 4th, we were 10, and JFK, we were 12. So if we were going into Natural Born at age 16, we had seen all those films, and now someone obviously don't, you know, mention their names and stuff or personal stuff. But now that you're a father and you have a son who's near 10, I mean, think about him watching Born on the 4th and Platoon and, you know, movie night's going to be, here's who Tom Berenger is. And, two more years till JFK. I mean, and then Natural Born. I mean, how do you see now as a parent what these films do for you and what they make you think?
Well, to be honest with you, I had, you know, my mentality as a young person, as a, you know, really little guy, I always wanted to be Captain America or the G.I. Joe, you know. And outside of just these monumental films, which I do solidly believe that they help form my personality and my values, which people, if you out there, if you think that film, you know, if you like film and it doesn't form your values, don't lie to yourself, okay? But it helped me put together, you know, what I wanted to be and to see it visually. But I always had it in me where I wanted to be the good guy. So seeing these characters, seeing these acts of war was something I anticipated eventually getting into and used to visualize in my head, even as a child. But that was my personality, is I would act like a soldier. I would, you know, play with the, you know, the guns. I would play with the G.I. Joes, you know. So for me, as for myself, that's I think that it matched my personality. But as a father of a young man and an older child, I don't believe that their personalities are the same. My oldest son is very similar with stuff, but his ideas about life, you know, are different than mine. And I don't think that he would exactly be like myself, where he, you know, G.I. Joes. He didn't play with the G.I. Joes. I kept him away from the guns, the plastic guns. And I just didn't want him to have to be pushed into that direction, because Dad was. I wanted him to make his own decision. So for him to view the films now, I think would be a completely different take, just because of the fact that we grew up differently. You know,
right.
We didn't, you know, a lot of times, a lot of military families, you know, that have traditions, or not traditions, but generations in the military, a lot of them grow up similarly. You know, mom and dad did this, dad hunted, you know, so I'm going to hunt, you know, kind of thing. But that, in this case, you know, my family didn't happen that way. And not only did it was a conscious decision, but also, you know, that was with my previous marriage, and it didn't work out. So he wasn't raised with me. So he wasn't raised on the G.I. Joes, although I did try. I'm not going to lie. But he was raised differently. So I think that the influence that I would have on him would be probably more of a social mental, you know, than it, you know, be an actual, you know, visualization of himself like I did. But you know, I
but
like
do you, but I mean, has, I mean so, do you huh? think you would let him watch those films? I mean, that's what I'm getting at. Like,
at that age, no. But at the same time, my mom and dad didn't quote unquote let me. You know, for me, I'm a true believer in, you know, in karma and fate. I believe that, you know that of me after a bajillion years of freaking, you know, being my brother. But I think that there's certain things, certain markers in life that you need to have. And I wouldn't have had the strong constitution of who I am in the military or as a individual without seeing some of these films at an early age, because it was, you know, like, was born on the 4th of July. I always wanted to be a Marine. It didn't change after seeing that film, but it definitely strengthened it. But I it wasn't just the uniform anymore. It became the person, Mr. Kovac, you know. It gave more personality and more depth, where it's, everybody says the grass is always greener, right? Well, watching these films, you know, through Oliver Stone's eyes and the way he wanted to portray it, it gave a grittier look to what I wanted to be, to where I was not really prepared for it, but I was aware that there wasn't always, you know, it wasn't sunshine and roses, you know, and puppies and kittens. There was a darker side to it. So, you know, I had to, because of who I am today. I felt like I needed to see those films. Would I necessarily sit down with my 10-year-old to watch it as a parent? Of course not. If he was like, hey, Dad, I'm going to go and watch Natural Born Killers, I'd roll and laugh and tell him he's stupid. No. But if it was meant for him to watch, he's going to watch it. You know, I'm sorry, but that's just the way I feel. I mean, you know, if he's meant to, what's going to shape him, he's going to run across in life, whether I wanted to or not. You know, it's that, that nature and nurture thing, you know, and the divine spirit out there is going to guide one way or the other. And film is part of that because it has such an influence on all your senses. And as a young person, it's one of the only quote unquote experiences you have until you live it yourself, you know, is film. That's why I think that makes film so special, you know? So no, I wouldn't let it. I would not sit down with him to watch it. If I saw him watching it, I don't know how I would handle it because I know I would be a hypocrite myself if I turned it off. Because at that ages, you know, I do remember I started watching them, you know, in my preteens, late, early teens. At 10 years old now, no, maybe in a year or two, maybe I could let it slide. I don't know. I'd have to see his personality because at the same time, you know, the movies do have an impression. Media does have an impression. So if he started turning kind of weird, I, you know, I don't know if I necessarily want him watching it, being my kid and all, but, yeah,
I definitely agree. I mean, what you're saying, like, no, you wouldn't let him watch it. That makes sense. And I mean, I agree with both your reasons for saying no. But I do agree with you on its shapes. Like, and of course we both have older brothers and I don't know. I don't think directly that, F maybe told you certain things, but I know with R that he was like, hey, watch Risky Business, watch this, watch that. So I was directly because of his love for film, which I just discovered recently when we talked again, him being as much into it as our dad and I, that we never really had that conversation to where I could be like, okay, he was sharing something that hit him. So of course for me, I mean, Born on the 4th of July is the exception because dad showed that to me. You know, for audience out there, our dad's a Marine. So he was like, watch this. Yep. People are going to shit on veterans. Don't spit on people in uniform. I remember I was at the Harbor Twins in Costa Mesa, which is now a Home Depot. And it sticks out in my mind because I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies. And I was mad because I couldn't see Platoon. And I remember thinking, but that's a war movie. And I remember dad just saying, but this is about how we were treated, you know, when we came back. And thankfully he was a Vietnam vet that didn't get.
Yeah. I remember talking to dad about that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, and you don't really, and so you see all these other images and then you're just like, oh yeah. And so to this day, you know, remember we were in St. Louis and those, pardon my language, feel free to cut this, Kev, but that those fucking idiots when we were walking across the bridge on the 70 to the arch, and those guys were spitting at people, and that one guy was like, don't engage, and those bikers, I thought they were going to get chucked into the freeway. It was like, and so when I saw that, I remember thinking to dad, I was like, oh my God, I'm like, they still do it. They still spit on guys, the fucking white trash. And I'm from Missouri, so I can say white, or my dad is, so I'm not knocking the white trash. But yeah, I believe what you were saying is the perfect point of the films find you whether they're going to or not, whether it's the F word or it's a song or a girl you're not supposed to be hanging out with. And that's the perfect, Natural Born Killers, I really believe it found us.
Yes. And, you know, not only was it a great source of entertainment, but that harsh reality, being from the islands, and you know it too, I mean, spending most of your life here, I mean, you know that we're sheltered from a lot. And that type of harsh reality and cut and dry look at different types of people was kind of like a practice run. Although it was a film and people say that, oh, you shouldn't base it on reality. Of course you shouldn't. But, you know, it does give you a glimpse into what things could be. And then when I got out and went into the Marine Corps myself and started to see the violence of the world, first thing I thought of was this film. And then I thought about his other films, you know, like how we were talking about that and, you know, Born on the 4th of July and then Platoon and all these other things. These are film, you know, these are film that people think that, you know, oh, it's just, you know, it's not real, it didn't happen, or it's this person or that person's idea of, you know, reality. But when you're actually face to face with those type of situations in real life on your own, it's almost a memory or a trial run when you reflect back on these films, at least for me, you know, whatever film it is. And Natural Born really woke up woke me up mentally. I mean, my position, you know, like we knew I was a intelligence guy in the Marine Corps. So just being able to identify the angles used in media helped me in my career. And that when I first started going through and learning how to do X, Y, or Z, I was like, hey, I saw this before in Natural Born Killers. And it's funny because it was like that. And it's techniques that are used, you know, that it's funny to see that the media, which made the film, is talking about the media in the film, talking about the media in real life, that, you know, it's a vicious cycle. But at the same time, it doesn't lie, you know.
Oh, right. And people are, wow. You know, people, when you go see this now, you're going to have a different take. And this is, you know, I hate saying it, and we're not going to talk about jerk off, but, you know, this is before fake news. And this is before, you know, this is talking about media actually shaping how and what it wants you to think. And it's
exactly,
like you said, it's a piece of entertainment. It's meant to just be another Oliver Stone film. But his quote is the greatest in the making of documentary Chaos Rising, where he's like, you know, this movie was just like, fuck it. And, you know, damn the torpedoes. And there really is just such a, what's so crazy about the movie is there's just this disgusting reality to it that you cannot deny, that you cannot pretend isn't there. And I think that's one of the worst things about it is that it is telling the truth. And it's not just like,
exactly,
oh, we wrote this really great story. And, you
yeah,
know, I mean, the story is people,
raw.
You know, that. Right, it's raw. I mean, they go on a killing spree. It's like Bonnie and Clyde of the 2000s, except Bonnie and Clyde was a story, truth, myth, stuff was added to it. And this is like, I mean, those scenes are so powerful when the kids are talking about they would want to be Mickey and Mallory. It's like some of the stuff that's glorified, it's kind of like, I think people, I don't want to say his name, but it's like, I think people would be like, if I was going to be a criminal or I was going to be such and such, I would be, you know, dump, you know. And it's like, and to think that there's people out there that actually want to be that actually want to be that racist, have that power, have that ability to just tell people to shut up, is what's scary. And sure, people go, oh, but it's murder. And then just that idea, the underlying theme, I want to ask you about, Eli, because I know you've had more Native American studies than I do, that underlying theme of that, you know, there's always chaos in the world. And we think we can stop it instead of accepting that the way of the world is chaos. So is there anything specific that you take from the film, having studied more about Native Americans and kind of some of the spirit world that is portrayed in that film, the way Indians follow them throughout the film, the spirit horse is always following them.
Exactly. I think it plays a lot on, you know, a lot of, with their LSD usage, it really plays into a lot of the religious aspects of Native American or Native beliefs across the world, in my opinion, and from what I've studied. And, you know, just the whole karma and the good and the evil constantly following these two characters, but it's explained through the side stories with the elder speaking to the young, you know, when they're in the tent speaking to, you know, the young boy about the demons that are following them, you know. This with the snakes in itself is, you know, the symbol of, you know, evil, you know, and the bite that basically started their whole downfall. You know, it's all just, you know, metaphors for what karma was going and floating around these guys. And as much as the film is gritty and it could be used, you know, and you know how the media is using it in there, but there's a whole spiritual aspect to it of good and evil fighting, and that the native spirits, the native people, are over there basically narrating what's going on, and they're seeing the tipping point where they tried to help. You know, at one point when the elder tries to help out Mickey and Mallory, and he gets shot and killed. That was like their last saving grace to where they could have changed and could have been, you know, spiritually been absolved. But they took out, and as Mallory pointed out, killed the one thing that was beautiful for them, the one thing that was pure for them. And I think that that speaks, you know, on a spiritual level about just, you know, society's tipping points too.
That also ties into the land, animals, like you're saying. I think it's the tipping point for everything. You probably picked up on it. I didn't pick up on it till last time, where it's like almost every scene in that movie has a horse or a spiritual horse following them or blended in the back, and just that idea of. Yes. You know, the spirits are always following you. Your demons are always following. And just that scene, like, yeah. I'm sorry, people, I have to spoil it when it says too much TV on Woody's shirt just for a brief second. It's kind of like this. It really is. As much as people take it as, oh, serial killer, Bonnie and Clyde, people on the run. It is kind of just like this indictment of how we're screwing up the world. So for me, it becomes more of a...
Yeah, how we're stepping away from nature. Yeah.
Right. I think it's scarier. You know, to me, it's more of a horror film than Freddy and Jason, in all honesty, when you watch it.
If you look at it as a total thing, in my opinion, you know, like you were saying, I mean, basically, the modern evolving, you know, self-serving society is what Mickey represents. Mallory's like the lost in between balance, and the Native Americans, you know, portrayed, you know, throughout, and the natural imagery portrayed without is the polarization. I think the whole, you know, looking at it now and watching it a few times, you know, with the intent of actually breaking it apart, you know, I really believe that the struggle was over Mallory. It was for her, just to see where she was gonna go. Because if you look at like the Scagnetti, how he was, you know, hunting her down specifically because he had, you know, his own twisted affections for her. It's all these different aspects, all these different players in the film. Center around her, like when they were, you know, the elder was speaking to the child about, you know, that she's has the sad sickness, you know, just all these different things, you know, these different aspects centered around her and her center being and her spirituality and everything. A lot of what they talked about was spiritual. Mickey was more of the self-serving, you know, let's get this now, let's do this now, let's kidnap this person, let's do this, let's do that. For self-immediate gratification. Then you got the media spin, where the media is, you know, trying to sugarcoat, you know, the evils that they've done to make it more appealing for the, you know, for the masses. Then you got the Native Americans, where they're like, she needs to connect and get away, needs to come back to her spirituality, you know, needs to get back to herself. And like you were saying, with the different, you know, the spirit animals that were there throughout the film, you know, yeah, you have the good and the bad spirits that are always there, and they're always there. And you can take, you know, ride one or the other. You can either ride the righteous, you know, horse, or you can get swallowed by or bit by the snake, you know. I mean, it is that way. And it's just so interesting how the film is so gory, but it takes on such a, you know, just a spiritual deeper aspect. And I know we spent a lot of time covering about, you know, the media involvement in a lot of it, but yeah, thanks for bringing that up with the, you know, the spirituality of it. It's a very spiritual film, and that in itself, you know, has had an impact, you know, in my later part in my life. So, yeah.
Oh, no, it's totally, I agree with you. Just so you know, we have 4 minutes. I don't mean to cut you off as we get closer, but yeah, I mean, my spirituality has never had some of the depths that we've discussed and looked at. And I guess it is kind of like overall the way you just explained it, it really got me thinking more about it and more about how it is around Mallory. And of course, we don't have time, but to let people know, it's also got Robert Downey Jr., obviously pre-Iron Man. Yes. So he's in there as a gritty actor, not taking anything away from Iron Man, but he's not an industry. And then Tommy Lee Jones has a fantastic warden. They yes. shot this stuff in a real prison, so that lends to the chaos. And then, of course, the cinematographer who, now known more for like Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Kill Bill. He's also known for Scorsese's Casino, A Few Good Men with Jack Nicholson. But this is back like gritty Robert Richardson, where he's like all of Oliver Stone's films, Platoon, Salvador, Talk Radio, Born on the Fourth, JFK, to where they're really experimenting. And Natural Born Killers, to me, is just such a, almost too, like life is an experiment. Like, you don't know where it's going. And now that we're down to 3 minutes, I'll give you the last 2 minutes before I do a wrap up. So if there's any closing thoughts you'd like to give, feel free.
I just believe that, you know, I'm glad that this, we talked about, you know, Natural Born Killers. You know, there's so much we can dissect on it. We covered, you know, the two parts that we joke about a lot, you know. There's so much more we could go into, but this is a film that you and I, we talk about often, you know, and being a cornerstone of, you know, not only great film as we're growing up, but cornerstones of just us coming into adulthood. And for the new younger people out there or older that want to, you know, revisit, I recommend you guys take a look at the film again and with newer eyes and with today's consciousness and see what else you can discover for yourself. But outside of that, thank you, Talking Pictures and Paul, for your time and inviting me on. You know, I really feel humbled by this experience. So you have a great one. And thank you, sir.
Oh, no, of course. I mean, hey, man, you're always invited on. It's not invited on. It's just when we can do it schedule wise. It's, I mean, that's what's so important in this last minute and a half that I wanted to say this film, for everyone, you know, it's like we showed it to our dad and it was a little bit not in his range, but it was also, you know, he wasn't seeing it as a 16-year-old. He was seeing it as someone who's, seen violence and war in his life, so he's kind of like, why do I need to watch this? And so he lived through these crazy Reagan times and different situations in the world and media baloney. So it was kind of like, you know, yeah, he did say to me, it's kind of like, you know, this fake news stuff goes on every day, like why are we watching it? So so it is something for everyone. And you know, thank you, Eli, that we got to talk about it, because we've talked about it so much over 25 years that I always wondered what it would be like yeah. to sit down and formally discuss it. Cause it was something that was just, you know, we were at the exact same place in our life, the exact moment. And so, you know, thank you for coming on. So, so yeah, thanks so much, man. And, have a wonderful day. And I'll definitely be talking to you very soon.
Yes, sir. Aloha, you guys.
All right. Aloha. All right, well, that was Natural Born Killers review with my brother Eli Kalilikane. You know the deal, whether it's morning, afternoon, or night, make sure to watch a good movie. Aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.